Here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world, this is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Welcome back to this special edition of Zach's Friday Finish Line. I am editor Maddie Johnson, and I'm here with content writer Ryan McQueeney.
Hi.
Today we are joined with Kathleen Smith, who's a principal at Renaissance Capital, and this is a company that specializes in IPO-focused research and investment management. Do you think, is there any hope left for 2016 to have a spectacular IPO? Do you think that there's going to be one company that's kind of going to blow it out of the park to get, because I think right now in 2016, it's only less than $10 billion has been raised so far.
Yeah. And I guess in terms of blow it out of the water, meaning like size and scope and
media coverage, everyone getting really hyped up about it.
A blockbuster, if you will.
Well, let's remember that from an investor standpoint, a blockbuster IPO is one that has a very strong return, not only at the time on the first day of trading, but thereafter. So it's not doesn't necessarily have to be one that is extremely well covered by the media. That may be successful for media eyeballs, but not from an investor standpoint.
Good point.
That's fair. Yeah. Point.
So we would say that already we have seen an incredible group of companies in the tech area that have tapped the IPO market and have done incredibly well, mainly because many of them have priced their IPOs very attractively, realizing that that's what public investors want. And then the post-IPO trading's been very strong. So we've had some good pricing. You're getting to the well-discussed, well-heralded unicorns such as Uber and Airbnb and Spotify and what will happen with those. And our view is that we're not yet going to see them, probably not in 2016. We'll probably see these types of companies in 2017. And really the reason that they're dragging their feet is they've been very good at getting high valuations, but not so good at turning their revenue into earnings, which is kind of the formula that's required for the public investor. And in addition, there's a disconnect between what the private investors have been valuing these companies for and what likely the IPO investors will value the companies for. And that disconnect means that it's better to wait, because if you come public now, you may have to realize value that's lower. You may have to take a markdown if you're a private investor in one of these unicorns, because you may not be able to sustain that private valuation. So we see the reason we're not seeing these jump in, the ones that so many are interested in. Remember, we're all interested in them, but we have no idea what their financials look like.
That's very true.
And so they're waiting, we think, because there's some concern about whether they can sustain those high pre-IPO valuations that they've been getting.
So do you think that we're in an economic climate or a market environment where investors are kind of increasingly skeptical about the unicorns that are still bleeding cash and failing to turn profits? Are we, in late 2016 now, have we possibly learned lessons from IPOs that have maybe been premature in the past? Or how has that kind of perspective of the market on companies like this that aren't yet turning profits as private companies?
Well, we think that public investors aren't paying too much attention to these companies because, we know they're interesting companies, but we don't know much about them. So it's very hard, from an analytical standpoint, to really say much. We think there's a lot of attention being paid on these companies by private investors and and creating valuations that are really unprecedented, I think, in the time I've been in researching. Companies have never seen so many private companies with such high valuations. So really, it's yet to be seen what the storyline really is until we can open up a prospectus with we can see the cash flow, we can see the balance sheet, the income statement.
Definitely. And like, you take a company like Uber, who has a valuation of $68 billion, like a number that it's hard for me to fathom when it's not just written down on paper. And then yet they lose over $1 billion in the first half of 2016.
The latest leaked
document. The latest leaked document. So it's, you're right. I think I like what you said before, there's a disconnect between what we think a company is valued and then what they're actually valued at.
Right. And we are also, I thought it was important that you pointed out, we simply don't know much about these companies. And a lot of the time, like with Uber, we speculate how much they're making, or in other words, losing, based off, I think this report that came out earlier this week was based off of a leaked document, mm-hmm. or something like that. So how does news like that, these leaked documents have a real world effect, especially, for a company that might have an IPO in its sights?
In terms of leaked documents, we prefer to see a prospectus over a leaked document any day.
Sure. So then looking forward to, companies that are more, let's say, realistic, that we could see these prospectuses soon. I think Spotify was one of the ones that's
one of those unicorns.
Been heavily rumored for this year. And you said Spotify probably not for a little bit more time then?
Well, I think there have been some speculation regarding Spotify that because they did an unusual financing, a convertible debt instrument that has a ballooning coupon and a more dilutive conversion terms based upon how long it takes for the company to finally get public, we thought there might be a fire under that company to move forward as quickly as possible. But we're not hearing that we'll see them. But we do think that based on their last financing terms that they are highly motivated to move forward. And certainly many of the other companies are motivated beyond that, because any private investor is not in business to be holding forever a portfolio of private companies. Their job is to monetize. A venture capitalist needs to monetize the holdings. So many of these private companies have been private and funded for far longer than historically we've seen in the past. So let's say we see those in 2017, but we are going to see some very strong companies like we've seen so far in 2016 tap the market, and I'd identify a few of them on our list, which would include a company called The Trade Desk, which is a bidding platform for advertising agencies. Nutanix, which has been talked about a lot, and we expect to see them soon. They make data center storage, a more efficient kind of data center storage and computing setup. There's a company called Aptio, with two P's, APPTIO, and that'll be an interesting, it's a high-growth subscription software for technology, management of technology resources used by chief investment officers. Or CTOs, I guess. So those are a few we can identify that we actually think we'll see in September. And then we'll also see, growth comes not just from technology, but there's a consumer side of the world, and there still are some strong consumer names, and we're expecting, and we see movement on the part of some interesting companies, including Elf Beauty, ELF, that stands for Eyes, Lips, and Face. Mm-hmm. They make branded cosmetics, a very fast-growing, very profitable company. A company that makes high-end coolers called Yeti Coolers, YETI. Again, fast-growing, very profitable. And we've just seen some movement on the part of a company called Camping World. That company is the leading, they have about $3.5 billion in sales, the leading retailer of recreation vehicles and financing and supply and services And so those are some names we would identify in the consumer side that ought to be some very interesting. They're going to be large IPOs that we think will have a lot of investor interest.
Thanks. And I want to hit on something that you just mentioned, specifically with Camping World. You said you were seeing some movement from that company. Can you explain what you mean by movement and kind of what types of things that you identify when a company is, when you can very obviously tell that a company is moving towards an IPO?
I guess that's appropriate when it comes to recreational vehicles, huh? They move. So we do a lot of tracking of, we track here our private companies that we think are candidates to go public based upon what we hear or learn about the size of the company and funding rounds. And we help our clients to identify those or early on see what might be in a shadow calendar. And then we track filings very closely. So these companies, for example, Camping World, Yeti, and Elf, all have filed. And once you file with the SEC, it takes time to review documents. You go back and forth. The company goes back and forth with the SEC. And we track every time they do any kind of an update and move forward that way. That's what I refer to. In the case of Camping World, they're updating financials, and it looks like from the prospectus and how complete it is and what they've updated that they have plans to go public very soon. And then we also have a line into, you know, what's happening. We're connected with the Wall Street desks and have an idea from our clients and other the Wall Street investment banking firms what they're seeing. So it's a combination of things. We feel our job is to be very timely about what's happening and how to look at the companies and then analyzing them. And so we can't take a week to analyze a company. We have to work on it as soon as we know anything and kind of get it together because you don't have a lot of time, nor do our clients. They want us to produce analytics for them. And so that's what our process is here.
Definitely. And when you mentioned Elf Beauty, it's reminded me of, I've seen that brand popping up everywhere for the past year or two. I've really noticed it. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it'll be, if it'll become the next Ulta or something like that.
Yeah. Well, Ulta's not being used by us as a peer because that's a retailer.
Right, right.
And this is a little bit more, they make their own product. So I don't know if it'll be on the exact same path. The thing that interests us in the company is that it has about $200 million in sales. It's growing at about 30% year over year, and it has really high operating cash flow margins of about 23%. That's a little different than a retailer. So it's very strong. We have Revlon as one comp, but Revlon's not nearly, it's not even growing, and it has nowhere near the profitability. So this company is at an early stage of its growth curve.
I wanted to touch again on another one of the specific companies that you mentioned, this time Yeti Coolers. From my understanding of Yeti, definitely fast growing, and I think that their brand exposure is becoming greater and greater by the day. But with a company like that that's focused in on one product in specific, in particular, with that it's in their name being a cooler manufacturer, does that present any specific types of difficulties as they transition to a public company? And do investors start to look for the company to grow by diversifying its product line?
Sure, of course, everyone wants to look at a single product company. But I think, and we're going to look at how it sustains its continuing growth. In addition to coolers, which right now are the bulk of the business, but there's still a large component of their business now from drinkware. And a lot of growth is coming from drinkware. And I think the thing that impresses us the most about the company is that it's hard to believe that they have sales of their latest 12-month sales are about $600 million. $600 million.
That's impressive.
Impressive.
And drinkware. And they're similar to Elf. their operating cash flow margins are about 30%.
Now, is Yeti sold, do they have an online store? Are they sold, like, are they sold in, like, Walmarts and Targets and stuff, or do they have, like, their own store locations?
Yeti sells through REI, Dick's, Bass Pro Shops, primarily, okay. And they also have a website for direct-to-consumer that's a smaller part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, so I think taking a step back then and looking at those three kind of consumer level companies that might go public, my question about companies with consumer products is an IPO almost on a certain level free publicity, or not necessarily free, but something that can increase brand awareness? And is that used as a motivation for these consumer products companies to go public?
It certainly does help brand awareness, but I think, and that lends itself to a consumer products company. But remember, the tech companies and consumer companies like this, being public gives them a lot of credibility with customers. So a technology company, maybe it's not about the brand, but a larger company will be more likely to want to do business with a tech company that's public rather than private. So there's a little bit of that, I guess, benefit, in addition to the capital raising and ability to use stock to make acquisitions, that kind of thing, and to raise additional capital. So you have a lot more flexibility. So I guess the added benefit for a consumer company would be added publicity.
Cool. And I guess kind of just a couple final questions. Thinking about, where we are right now with 2016, looking at your point about company credibility kind of reminded me of earlier when you had mentioned investors being public investors being much less interested in these ridiculously high private valuations. Are things like credibility and true proper valuations and maybe like this hesitancy to go along with these really high private valuations, are these a product of a newfound skepticism in the market in 2016 or over the last few years? Or is this these types of feelings something that has a long-founded historical basis?
We might be more analytical now than we've been 20 or 30 years ago. Basically, the issue, I think, is that a company that does not have earnings or does not have, the metrics to analyze a company without earnings mean that a company can get overvalued without sort of an anchor of earnings. And if investors get spooked in one way or the other, the stocks can have a huge swings because they have to figure out, the discount rate on the future value of earnings where you see none today and it has this great growth trajectory have so many more variables in analyzing the company than a company that has, more predictable earnings and growth. So that becomes the challenge when you get to companies that are growing really fast, and it's hard to really analytically figure out what the forecasted sustainability of their future earnings are. So those companies, any company without earnings, and certainly has more volatility. And then if you're a company with high growing earnings, maybe a profits, is still going to have the volatility because you've got to map in that growth rate, and you can't see a hockey stick growth rate maintain itself all the time. So they're just very hard to analyze. So when markets have the fear factor in them, they're going to be a lot more skeptical about how they value or even want a company that can't show them, an investor, that they've got a real path to profitability. So that is, I think that you asked if that has always been the case. I think so. Maybe we I think so. Always, eventually, you know, the rationality of the market has to take over, and I just don't think that's anything new today versus what it was years ago.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. So kind of last question to wrap up this interview. So it looks like Renaissance Capital has an IPO outlook report coming out. Would you be able to tell us a little bit about that report?
Sure. What we do every year for our clients, and we provide the report also publicly, is to map out what's happened so far this year, kind of like our conversation, that what we see to expect between now and the end of the year. And we identify the companies that we're thinking have a good shot at, based on what we know, tapping the public market by the end of the year. This is a good time to reassess. The market slows down a bit in August. We know the companies won't start a roadshow yet. They'll start as soon as we get back to our desks after Labor Day. And so that gives everybody a chance to start looking at and getting ready to understand the new companies that they're going to see.
Cool.
So be on the lookout for that soon. And I think that just about does it for us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us with this interview. I know Ryan and I use Renaissance Capital's website.
Yes, definitely. Some incredible research there, and we appreciate your insights. So thanks so much, and thanks for joining us. Have a good one.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And of course, thank you to the audience for joining us this week. Now that we've heard from Kathleen Smith and Renaissance Capital, we want to hear from you guys.
Yeah. So remember to like the Zach's Research pages on Twitter and StockTwits and Zach's Investment Research on Facebook. And then remember to like and subscribe on SoundCloud.
And remember to tune in to the next episode of the Zach's Friday Finish Line.